Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. On this week's show, we collected some comments from some interviews with listeners of ours about overcoming challenges as a visually impaired person, and specifically what may be possible and maybe what's not possible.
We'll hear some of their heartfelt thoughts on the subject, as well as some stories of how they've overcome other people telling them that something was impossible that turned out not to be. Usually at this point in the show, we give a tip of the week. Well, this week's tip is actually a dedication. We decided to do this show when we became aware of a young blind woman who had completed her training to become a pharmacist, yet was denied the chance to do that by her government. We've heard from many people who've overcome a variety of challenges and barriers, but it turns out that some barriers are insurmountable. This is one of those cases, and we're dedicating this show to her.
There were some very interesting comments posted on our email listener forum that went back and forth, and the discussion was so interesting that we decided to ask for volunteers to participate in a show discussing some of the topics so we could share this with everybody else who listens to the show. By the way, if you'd like to participate in our listener forum, mostly we give out weekly announcements for upcoming shows, you can send an email to the following email address, eyesonsuccess, followed by the plus sign, followed by subscribe at googlegroups.com. And if you didn't catch that, that, as usual, will be in the show notes for this show.
Turning now to our low-tech item, we'll meet today's guests, of which we have five, and we'll just let them introduce themselves.
I'm Anna from the Accessible Android blog. If any of your listeners ever decide to go Android and visit the Eyes Free list, they'll find me there as Anna G. When I'm not being an Android person, I'm an English teacher and a translator and interpreter.
My name is Gary Steves. I'm a visually impaired reporter for Accessible Media. But my regular job, I guess, that pays more of my bills is I'm a social worker at an extended care facility with seniors. For hobbies, I'm quite involved in blind ice hockey in Canada. And music is my other big hobby, I guess. I play drums in a classic rock cover band.
My name is Marcy Weinberg. My training was education. I kind of, for a while, just didn't pursue much of anything. And then I had an opportunity come along about a year ago, working for a new firm called Fedora Outlier. And we do Apple consulting, teaching, and support of all products Apple. So I'm able to take all my knowledge of Apple products and my teaching and roll it into one.
My name is Jose Tamayo. Mostly, I'm into technology. That is my line of work. I've held several positions in information technology. I like the outdoors, and I'm a person that likes to be out and about, doing lots of things with nature and helping people and making a difference.
My name is Ann Parsons. I am an AT trainer and Braille teacher. I run my own business, which is called Portal Tutoring.
And all of them are blind, having lost their vision anywhere from birth to their mid-20s. They all live in North America, but they span most of the continent, from Florida to Pennsylvania, New York, California, and British Columbia. And among them, they've been on many prior episodes of Eyes on Success on a wide variety of topics, including Android accessibility, knitting, canoeing, the Apple TV, DigitEyes, television reporting, and ice hockey. And we will have links to all of those shows in the show notes. And I know there's an awful lot of them, but don't worry, we'll tell you who's who. We don't expect you to recognize their voices after those short introductions.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. Success, success.
This week's focus topic is some thoughts on what's possible or impossible for a blind person. the young pharmacist plight came to the attention of our listener forum and elicited a lot of comments. And we selected a few people from that discussion to interview for this show, and many of them expressed can-do attitudes. Anne expressed some pretty strong feelings about what's possible or impossible.
I think that blind people can do pretty much anything that occurs to them, barring piloting an airplane or a car, but pretty much everything else is possible with a little imagination. And that's where you get into the problem-solving part of all this, and that's where the possibilities come in, because you spend your life, if you have a disability, it doesn't matter what disability it is, but if you have one, in problem solving. And the better you are at problem solving, the more possibilities are open to you. I hate to say this, but bureaucrats are notorious for not being able to think out of the box. It's a characteristic of bureaucrats.
Well, and I think also, you know, they haven't been blind for their entire lives. So in many cases, it's up to the blind individual to come up with the creative concepts and propose solutions because they're used to dealing with some of the issues and barriers. And so sometimes that might be a better approach.
I think you're probably right about that, Pete. I have found that is the better way to do it. And that's why I'm working for myself instead of working for somebody else right now.
So you worked out how you wanted to deal with your career, and you're doing more or less what you want, and you're just doing it in a slightly different way.
Yes.
And you don't have a boss you need to convince that you're able to do it. You just do it.
Right. Exactly.
So I think there's kind of two issues here. One is from the individual themselves figuring out how they can do a particular task. And the other issue is you may want to do some particular career in a particular way, but sometimes you may have to modify what that career really involves and how you approach that, what specifically you do.
Yes, I think that's an accurate assessment of the situation.
I had a similar experience in graduate school. I mean, I knew I wanted to be a physicist, a scientist, and I really wanted to be an experimental physicist. And so I started out in a lab, and as you can imagine, it was, you know, a bit more difficult. And after a while, my advisor asked, do you really want to continue this, or wouldn't you rather really be a theoretical physicist and do some theory? It might be easier for you. And he finally said to me, you know, I have confidence in you no matter which way you go, and I'll support you either way. Just realize it'll be a little bit more difficult doing an experimental thesis and maybe take a little longer. And, you know, I thought about it for a while, and I finally decided, well, you know, I'd like to get out of graduate school, get it done. And so I finally wound up doing some theoretical program for my thesis. And, you know, again, I was still a physicist, and I got to solve neat problems. And when I got to Xerox, I worked with people in the lab. So I got to scratch my experimental itches that way by working with experimental physicists.
You've run into situations where people couldn't figure out how you might get something done and you had to explain it to them. And I remember one time Pete wanted to buy his first mini computer so that he could do his own work on his own computer. And it was in the early 80s and it was before the PC revolution. And so he asked his boss to buy this piece of equipment for him. And the boss, of course, didn't have the nerve to say anything to him about being blind. So he cornered me in the hall and he's like, Pete asked me for his own computer. Do you think he'll be able to handle it? And I just looked at him. I said, well, geez, every time he moves, he disconnects and reconnects his stereo. I don't see this is going to be any more difficult. And the guy took that as an answer and approved the purchase.
But sometimes, as the visually impaired person, I think, you know, as this story points out, the ball is in your court often to come up with the solutions that are going to work and make the objective arguments to make things work to the people you're working around.
As Anne said, the fact that you often need to figure out how to do things differently from sighted people means that you develop good problem-solving skills. Gary's experience has led him to understand that others value these problem-solving skills once they know about them. And moreover, he's learned that what some people may perceive as a limitation can actually turn out to be an advantage.
I know when I first started looking for work, I'm a bit of a late bloomer, so I got my social work degree when I turned about, I think, 40. I went to an interview once and I thought I was kind of a shoo-in for that job because I've been doing all my practicums and hospital work and all that. And I didn't get it. And I went to see my practicum supervisor that I'd had the year before. And he goes, well, did you talk about how you solve problems around blindness and stuff like that? And I said, well, no. And he goes, when I worked with you, Gary, that was like the biggest skill you had. And if you don't tell them because they don't work with you, all they're imagining is barriers, barriers, barriers. And he goes, I guaranteed if you had brought up the topic and they started talking about barriers that you would have on the spot had solutions for almost all of them because they're not barriers to you. I really changed how I did my interviews after that, where I made sure I talked about blindness in the end, just kind of asked people had any questions about how I could do this or do that. And now, like having been a social worker now for 7 years, if I went to an interview, actually being blind is an asset to my job. I can give many stories about how the fact that I can't see had the benefits to working with, you know, seniors, people in palliative care, people as a whole. There's a lot of benefits to the fact because people, they're more comfortable in a lot of ways because they're off. I work with people who are sick or whatever is going on for them. The fact that I can't see them somehow makes them a bit more comfortable with me. And I have, you know, some of the most ornerous fellows in the place who yell and scream at everybody, the ones that, you know, are kind of my buddies. And I, you know, nursing staff is getting me to ask, you know, Joe Blow to do this or do that because I'm the only one he actually talks to. So, you know, that's kind of neat how over a couple of years and having some job experience, I've learned that I would actually not just talk about blindness at the end of my interviews, like, you know, I can do these and do that, but I would be able to tell people how it's an asset to my job. And I would have solutions for how I've solved some of the barriers because there are some challenges, obviously. But that's the neat thing that I find. And for me, that's changed since working as a social worker for the last 7 years or so.
Yeah, I guess it really demonstrates to others how you're a real problem solver and those skills can be used to overcome what others may perceive as barriers.
Mm-hmm. It dawned on me when I was first working somebody in palliative care. And I realized when his family would come and see him, they would see a fellow who's probably lost all kinds of weight. I think he had cancer and would obviously look very different. And they wouldn't be able to probably hide on their faces that shock of that, right? Like just even though they were there yesterday, it doesn't matter. Like every time they see their loved one, that comes out. Whereas when I walk in, I can tell if they're weak and tired and all that from their voices. Like let's not be silly. Of course, I can tell all those things, but I don't have a facial reaction I'm having to control. I'm just who I am.
I think in so many situations and even simple things, you know, people who worked with Pete for years and then they'd wind up at lunch together and they'd say, well, how do you eat? That if they haven't had to work it out, they just don't think of how they could do something without seeing.
And it all depends on how people think you ought to do something as to whether you can do it or not, or whether they think you can do it or not.
Yeah, people do have some preconceived notions and or cultural society preconceived notions about how things should be done.
Yeah, they do. And that often gets in the way of solving a problem.
Well, that was Anne again, and Anna concurred.
You know, people have an amazingly small imagination when it comes to doing things the way that is different from the way they do it. So in my own job interviews, a lot of times I get questions about how do you do this and how do you do that? And they're things that I think are pretty obvious and that don't require vision at all. But apparently, you know, in their mind, it's hard for them to separate the visual aspect from the rest of it. It so happens that I just finished reading a book called Fringeology by Stephen Volks. And what the book is about is the study of the paranormal. And what the book is really about is the concept of mystery, how we have a really hard time dealing with things that we can't explain within our paradigm. And I think that to some degree, people with disabilities are a mystery to people who don't have them and who don't, you know the people who have disabilities. What this book said is that if you have a mystery, you tend to laugh at it. You tend to want more proof than is necessary to be convinced. You need to have some fundamental changes of thought to be able to accept it.
One of the other things that we do as volunteers is we go into the local elementary school and we teach science lessons to the fourth graders. We do one special session during the school year, which we call Pete's Blind Act, somewhat irreverently. And we go in and Pete explains to the kids how he reads, how he tells time, how he does all of this stuff. And inevitably, somebody raises their little hand and asks, well, how do you eat? And I always kind of interrupt and I say, well, why do you think he's so thin? And everybody gets a good laugh at it and they figure out, well, obviously he's able to eat because he's not dead.
Well, one thing that's great about the fourth graders is they haven't been socialized to not ask these supposedly embarrassing questions. So they're very open about asking these questions, whereas adults, they've kind of been socialized into not talking about these taboo topics. And so people won't ask these questions that they're really wondering inside. So if you have some icebreakers and open up these lines of communications, sometimes it can really be a help.
As Anna said, it's common for blind people to run into other people who assume that the blind person isn't able to do something. Well, here's Jose pointing out that what's really even more important than other people's perception is your own self-confidence.
I think that we're raised and sometimes society teaches us that we have limitations. And what happens is we learn to measure ourselves by what other people measure. And I think that there's an opportunity to learn how to measure our own ability by trying things out. If someone says that I can't do something, by golly, I am going to go try it and I'm going to go do it. That's what I think as individuals with any impairment. And I like to think of my impairment in particular, my vision impairment. It's just something that I have. I think that we all have something that limits us in some way.
There's a lot to be said for self-confidence, not overconfidence, because you don't want to be misled, but having a good objective sense of what you can do and what you can't do.
And Marcy added that you need to make an effort in order to succeed. Don't just think you can, but do something about it.
My feeling is that you're not going to get somewhere by saying, I can't do that. You're going to get somewhere by saying, I might be a little scared, I might be a little intimidated, I might be a little worried, but if I go out there and I do it, I know that I can do it. So I have to get over my fear or get over my trepidation, and I just have to get out there, because if you don't try, if you don't make that effort, you know, you might as well just, you know, be sitting in a corner someplace and playing with your lips. So I've always been a cup half full kind of a person. I used to say to my kids all the time, we don't say I can't. If we try something and maybe we have a difficult time doing it, then that's one thing. But we never just stand there and say, I can't do this. You got to give it your best shot.
And Jose agrees.
I've been able to do pretty much everything that I've set my mind to do. And I'm talking about paddling trips. I have fixed cars. I'm not a mechanic. Fixed cars, fixed roofs. I'm not a roof man. You know, so I can't get in a car and drive, but eventually I will. Our technology will be available for people like me to be able to drive. And that I can guarantee you. Why? Because if we had said years ago that there was no way to get to the moon, we would have lost that race. And so that discovery and that ability to think forward and to think of your own ability to do things is what really makes a difference in, you know, inside of us.
And there's a mantra related to that that Nancy and I have been using for many years. In kindergarten, our son had a teacher who told him, never say you can't, always say you'll try. And we bring that very often into the public schools when we're giving our presentations.
Marcy went on to say that although being blind isn't always a bed of roses, many blind people have managed to figure out how to get through life and be productive and happy.
I hope what I've put across is that I'm a positive person, I'm an optimistic person, and despite the fact that I've had to learn to live with something that I guess I never really thought I'd actually have to learn to live with, I just go about and I do my day, and I'm not going to say I never have moments. You know, people say to me, oh, you know, you're so wonderful, and, you know, I look up to you, and you're so fantastic. And I say to them, yeah, you've never seen me when I've had one of my moments. Like, I don't want to be put on a pedestal for what I am or you know. And they'll say, well, other people would have just sat in the corner and not done anything. Well, But there are lots and lots and lots of other people who are being productive just like I am. So I'm not a hero. I'm just me. I can't be anybody but who I am.
You've run into lots of similar situations to that.
Yeah, well, that's true. People are very often making those comments, but although they're nice, they're not particularly helpful.
True. Anna's experience shows us that solving problems isn't always as straightforward as we might like it to be. Here's a story of a situation that could have gone horribly wrong.
You must have had incidents in your life where someone did put up some barrier for you in terms of telling you you couldn't do something and then wound up showing them that it could be done anyway, and that must feel good.
One of the places where I teach now is a community college, and so I knew they were looking for part-timers, so I sent in my vita, and the department chair called me, interviewed me. We had a five-minute interview. She said, yeah, definitely, you have a class. I'll probably give you a second one. Great. So a week later, I went into the office to turn in some paperwork, and everyone panicked because once they realized I wasn't a student, they didn't know what to do with me. And so we had to have this big meeting with human resources, and we went through this 29-point list of job duties that a part-time instructor does. And so, you know, I had to answer questions about everything from how I would handle class discussion to how I collect and grade homework, blah, blah, blah. And what was interesting to me was that it wasn't my first teaching job. I think I would have been more sympathetic if that had happened for my first teaching job, maybe my second. But, you know, at this point, I'd been teaching since 1999. So those questions just seem kind of stupid because if I've done it successfully in other places, I obviously know how to do it. And so, but I answered all the questions. I knew how to do that. And the thing is, the prepared questions that my chair had for me just showed an absolute lack of, I don't know, I'll just stop right there. she said, well, you can't just lecture all the time. People have to discuss. And if you're blind, you can't carry on a discussion. And I said, well, I would carry it on just like I'm carrying on this conversation. I'm not sure where the eyes come into it, you know, that kind of thing. And so my chair and I have had our differences of opinion about many things. But, you know, she's finally starting to come around.
What's interesting in what you said there is you said that people would ask you questions about how would you do this, how would you do that. And sometimes those can be difficult questions to answer. I find that sometimes, yeah, I know just from my past experience that I'll be able to do these things. I don't know exactly how, and you may not be able to give a precise answer. But I often know that once you get involved in a situation, you can start figuring out ways. You may have to modify it and iterate a few times, but you know that you'll succeed. So sometimes it's hard to give an answer to those things.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, when I was venting about that experience to a friend of mine, he said, well, I don't know how I would have answered all of those questions myself, and I'm excited. I would just, you know, sometimes you just do stuff and you work it out as you go. And I think that's true for us, too. And I think we need to have the confidence in ourselves that we know how to take risks and we know how to do stuff, and we'll just get it done.
Sadly, a lot of people aren't convinced until they actually see the success happen. So sometimes you just have to be patient and work it out and show people your success.
And just as with anything else, you can establish a track record of success that will convince other people that you might be able to do the next thing and they won't be as worried about it. Here's Jose.
That's the most powerful tool, just showing people that you can do it. And that's with anything. I mean, when I got my first job as an engineer, I was cited, but I still had to prove that I could do my job. Well, you have to prove that you can do it. And that's going to happen everywhere. You have to prove that you can do it. And sometimes people don't believe you, and you have to work hard at helping them see that you can do it, whether you're cited or not. I never had to ask for a promotion, but when I did, I had to prove that I could do my job, whether I was cited or not. I'll give you an example. 2 years ago, I was at my mother's house working on redoing a roof. And I'm not a roofman. My work is technology. I've done computer work all my life. But I was up there fixing my mom's roof. And some neighbor came up and said, hey, what are you doing up there? You know, you're going to fall. And you shouldn't be doing that. You can't see. And then some other neighbor came by and said, well, you know what? That guy right there will do anything you ask him to do. And doing something based on where you are and how you feel is very powerful. Doing something because somebody else is telling you that whether you can do it or not, that's where we begin to get into limiting our own abilities and our own way of doing things.
Now for this week's final segment. Although there are certainly special challenges being blind, some of these issues are common to everybody. So don't assume that if you're having some difficulty, it's because you can't see. Anna has a story that really demonstrates this.
I know for me, when I started teaching, I was really lucky in that a very close friend of mine who was sighted started teaching at the same time. So a lot of times I would think about what happened in the classroom and I would think, oh, that was really stupid. I shouldn't have done it that way. Or why did my students do this? And I would find myself blaming blindness in one way or other a lot. But when I would compare notes with my sighted friend, she had a lot of the same stuff to say. And I thought, oh, well, she isn't blind and she's having that problem too. And so that was really, really helpful for me in helping me sort out what's real from what's in my head.
We want to leave you with the thought that in spite of the young pharmacist situation, we still believe that almost anything is possible. And we'd like to thank Anna for putting that so nicely.
I think anything is possible as long as we understand what we're getting into, as long as we're able to break it out into tasks and think about how we will do each of those tasks. And as long as we're willing to take a little bit of a leap of faith. Sighted people don't always know what they're going to get themselves into, but they just try stuff. I'm reading a book right now about climbing Mount Everest. And the people who did that didn't have a plan. and they didn't know exactly what they were getting into, and they didn't know if it would work, but they tried it. And some people made it, and other people did not. And I think that's kind of what life is like as a blind professional trying to make way in a job that maybe other people haven't tried yet.
So there you go. Instead of coming up with a whole bunch of reasons why something can't work, you need to be creative and confident and come up with actionable items that can make things work for you.
And we'd like to thank again Anna, Gary, Marcy, Jose, and Anne for their thoughts on these issues, because these are issues that all blind people run into, and many people have some pretty strong feelings on the topic, and it was just so wonderful for us to be able to talk with each of them on the subject.
And again, if you have some more thoughts on some of these subjects, or just want to receive weekly announcements of the shows, sign up for our email listener forum. We'll have links to that email address for signing up at our website, along with other resources, www.eyesonsuccess.net.
That's it for show number 1349. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about the Seeing Eye GPS app for iPhones. We'll talk with Sendero Group founder and CEO Mike May about its history and features. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-258-0333, and we'll try to address your question in an upcoming program.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey, and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. For detailed information or a full archive of programs, visit www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also follow us on Facebook and Audioboo at Eyes on Success, and on Twitter at @_EyesOnSuccess. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success, and have a nice day.